Hello, and thanks for tuning in to this episode of Dialogue Tree. Minority representation continues to be a hot-button issue in the gaming world, and my guest today, Charles Battersby, speaks to me about transgender issues. Charles is a writer, actor, and avid gamer who has designed many mods and writes for several gaming websites. In April of this year, he moderated a Penny Arcade Expo East panel called Press XY, Transgender Issues in Gaming. I speak to Charles about that panel and about the two panels he is moderating at the main Penny Arcade Expo in Seattle at the end of this month. So thank you very much for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me on again.
So you chaired a panel called Press XY, Transgender Issues in Gaming at PAX East this past April, and you're reprising the panel at the main PAX in Seattle at the end of August. What made you want to chair a panel on transgendered issues in video games?
Well, I've been an out-of-the-closet cross-dresser for the last 20 years. So, just for my own personal interest, I'd noticed over the last few decades that there are a lot of transgender video game characters. And I'd also noticed that there's an interesting trend. Well, not necessarily a trend, but there's an interesting phenomenon that any group of game designers is much more likely to have a transsexual in it than any random cross-section of the population. So noticing that there are these characters and game makers that are transgendered, and as a transgender player myself, I noticed certain games have a special appeal to me. So I got together a group of other fans of game designers and journalists to talk about these issues.
Yeah, go into that a little more. You had quite a few people on the panel. Eric Patterson, who's from EGM now, Rebecca Heineman, who was a founding member of Interplay. You had Chris Avalon, who's famous for doing a lot of high-profile RPGs and is now creative director at Obsidian. So how did you approach these people to be on the panel? How did you choose who you were going to have on the panel?
Well, I looked at people who were doing similar work to what I had done. Eric had written at length on the character Poison from the Final Fight and Street Fighter games. And for any listeners that don't know, Poison is one of the first and most famous characters that has been, depending on which version of the game and in what country you're reading it, Poison is either a post-op transsexual or a pre-op transsexual. And he had written a very long article and done some interviews with the game makers about that. As for Rebecca Heineman, she's had a very long and distinguished career. And in looking up, the most accomplished game developers that were openly transgender, she was one of the first people that I contacted. And as for Chris, he did one of my favorite games, which is Fallout New Vegas, and a few others, including Knights of the Old Republic Part 2. And both of those have very strong themes of being able to choose your character's gender and appearance. And in the games that he's created, gender has a slight effect on story and some gameplay issues, but it's not a huge deal on defining your character. He had a great deal to contribute along these lines.
So was the idea then to get kind of a cross-section between transgender video game designers and video game designers that perhaps are not transsexual, but have experimented with cross-dressing in video games or allowing quite a bit of gender choice in video games and kind of getting their reactions to this issue?
Absolutely. I wanted to have a very diverse cross-section of people that have dealt with this theme in different ways. So one of our other panelists was Janelle Jaques, and she has, if you watch the video from the panel, she has a resume a mile long dating back to the old pen and paper days of gaming. And we also brought in Morgan McCormick, who's a transgender journalist and a gamer as well, who shared a lot of my views on the gender choices in games like Knights of the Old Republic. And so having this big cross-section of people that make the games, that are transgender people themselves, or just happen to have an interest in that as a journalist, it was important to have a lot of different voices rather than just one small cross-section.
Now, visibility was a theme running throughout the panel, and this is the idea that, you know, these transgender intersex video game characters that you all were talking about during the panel, you know, are maybe not generally known to be transgender.
Yes, a lot of the characters, they involve plot twists. So we had a lot of people in the audience where we were giving spoilers that character X. I won't do it on your show, but if people watch the video, they'll learn that some characters that are presumed to be women or non-cross-dressers for most of the game are later revealed to be as part of a plot twist. And there are also a few other characters that they might appear very prominently in the advertising for a game, but the game developers don't necessarily hammer home that this character is transgender unless you actually play the game.
Why do you think that is?
Well, for the characters that are plot twists, in some cases there is this, you know, really cool moment where you suddenly realize, oh, that character is intersexual. And one of the ones that had the greatest impact for me is a game called Nier, which has a character named Kaine, and you can play through the entire game just thinking that she's a very tough, foul-mouthed, strange woman who's persecuted by the other villagers for some reason. But there's a New Game Plus mode where if you play through it again, it'll be revealed that she's intersexual and that that's the primary reason why the other characters in the game react negatively to her.
Hmm. What do you make of those kinds of plot twists? Do you think that's a good thing for transgender, intersex, cross-dress visibility?
Well, it depends on how it's done. You know, video games, like any other art form, they can use this as a joke, which isn't the best way to do it. But they can also do it in the case, like I said, of Nier, where it's a very, very deep, very profound, emotionally impacting revelation when you learn the character's backstory.
I found it interesting because one of the panelists at the PAX East panel made a statement that, you know, perhaps this issue of visibility could arise because there's a lack of obvious stereotypes for transgendered people. The idea sort of being that there isn't an easy way to design a character to quickly read as transgender. What do you make of that? I mean, do you think that's accurate?
I think that depending on the type of game, you know, certain ways to, I guess, spot a transgender person, you know, obviously the voice not being congruous with the character's appearance is one easy cheat for game designers. But I'm sure a lot of designers are trying to walk the balance of including transgender characters, but not including offensive or negative stereotypes. And so it is very difficult for an artist working in any medium to directly work with a minority group that they don't actually belong to and try to be inclusive without being stereotypical.
Yeah, there's sort of this idea that when a minority, any minority is included in a creative work, you know, sometimes you'll get this, sometimes you get this criticism of tokenism. And do you see that as a block to sort of more general acceptance of these kinds of characters in video games?
It is. You know, it's a block in any medium. And in video games, I don't think a lot of designers are really focusing on trying to be inclusive of the transgender in terms of the characters in the game. I know that a lot of developers and publishers, they try to be inclusive about the communities. And, you know, there are a lot of games out there that have a great appeal to transgender players. But I don't think a lot of developers are really actively saying, you know, how can we include a transgender character in this game just for the sake of having a transgender character? It's usually, they usually include a transgender character to suit some specific plot point, or to have far too often there is the humorous note where they try to have a transgender prostitute as a little gag, or include, you know, a flamboyant stereotype specifically to make the character a prissy, unlikable villain. And that happens a little too often for my taste.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit. I mean, do you think that those sorts of uses of these characters in video games is changing? Is it getting better? I mean, obviously, I think you can make the argument that that sort of use of these characters or acceptance of these kind of characters kind of is mirroring the general trend of that in society. Do you have any comments on that?
It's absolutely getting better. I remember in the game, one of the Resident Evil games called Code Veronica, the villain is Alfred Ashford, who is also secretly his sister, Alexia Ashford. He's the Norman Bates split personality who is easily defeated early in the game, and he's written as crazy psychotic. And that was about 11 years ago that that game came out. And more recently, there have been a lot more positive depictions and also more playable characters. I know I talk about Kaine a lot, but she really is a terrific example of a character that just happens to be transgender. She's heroic. She's integral to the story. And it's wonderful that those designers at Square Enix included such a character. And also, just last year, we talked about this at the PAX East panel, that Poison is finally a playable character, and she's a great character to play amongst the roster. She's not she's not an easily defeated character. She's a really well-balanced, fun-to-play character.
Yeah, I found Poison to be maybe one of the more interesting characters in terms of history because, on the panel it was talked about that Poison in the Japanese version of the game was I believe she was a woman, and in the American translation of the game it was made that she was transgender because it was thought that perhaps Americans wouldn't want to beat a woman up. What do you make of that?
Well, we did go over this a little bit at PAX East, where we have some old design documents where there's the Japanese word "new half" used in describing Poison, and that's a Japanese colloquialism for intersexual, or what Americans would call a hermaphrodite. So some people think that the character was conceived all along as being intersexual, and that it's just an urban rumor that the American version changed the character from a transsexual, or changed the character from a woman to a transsexual, just to avoid outraging feminists.
Yeah, it seems like it might be a little strange to change a character to be transgender to avoid controversy, especially in the late 80s.
Exactly. But it's really fun to talk about it. There are different documents that have been officially released by Capcom that officially say that she is transsexual, even though in the new game it's just, thinly implied. Characters say she's unladylike when talking to her.
That brings up an interesting point. I noticed that most of the characters that were mentioned during the panel were Japanese. And do you think there's any significance to that?
Yeah, I think that in Japan, it's much more culturally acceptable to have a transgender character. And in America, even though we are, a very tolerant and politically correct culture, people often think that transgender people are, weird and icky. And it's been a very long fight to get the same sort of acceptance and tolerance for transgender people that other minority groups have gotten in recent decades.
Let's talk about crossplay a little bit, because I find that to be an interesting, kind of intriguing topic.
For readers who don't know, cosplay is when people dress up as video game characters or anime characters and then go to conventions. Crossplay is when a person of one gender dresses as a character of another gender. So...
I find that interesting because I think that there's a long-standing tradition of cross-play in video games. I mean, I myself usually like to play a character of the opposite gender when I can, especially in RPGs for, whatever that reason is. I've never really examined it that closely, I suppose. But what do you think of that? I mean, do you think that that is sort of could it be a stealth way to get people more accepting of transgender characters in video games?
Oh, absolutely. you know, whenever I play a game that lets me choose my character's gender but doesn't have a gameplay effect of it, games like Mass Effect, for example, I almost always play a female character.
Yeah, why is that?
So when playing a game like that, I think that it is a great way to encourage players to explore gender roles. And in terms of games like Mass Effect and just about everything that BioWare makes, you can also choose your character's sexual preference. So you can play a female character and you can make that character a lesbian if you want to. And in most of BioWare's more recent games, you can also play a male character, and that character can be gay. So if you're interested in just exploring another gender role but want to keep your sexual preference, Mass Effect and Dragon Age and a lot of other recent games will let you do that.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a strain of tolerance among the geek community, especially because I remember you know, playing a lot of those old D&D games, and you know, it's even in things like Baldur's Gate from probably what 15 years ago now, there's lines in there that say that your gender does not have any impact on your stats, and women of the realm, I think as they called it, can do anything that the men can do. What do you think about that?
Well, I love games where there's no gameplay effect on choosing your gender, but it still affects the storyline. And if I could just keep harping on the Fallout series, they do have you know, a lot of slight effects that will add up over the course of a 50-100-hour gameplay session. And so your gender will have little bits of effect in things like the more recent Fallout games and the Mass Effect games, too. And I think it's just terrific when it's a question of building a character and a story rather than trying to min-max your character's abilities based on gender choice.
Can you see a day when a video game such as Mass Effect may have a choice to play as a male to female transgender or a female to male transgender?
I can see that happening in the very near future, because what a lot of RPG developers are doing is so close to that as it is, being able to pick your sex, your sexual preference, your appearance, being able to choose what your character says and does. You know, when I'm playing Mass Effect, even though my Commander Shepard is a woman, you know, she's actually transvestite. You know, only I know, and a handful of lucky Asari, but that's how it is when I'm playing, and it's only a very slight degree off from what the developers are letting players do in the current version of their games.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially with these role-playing games, players are sometimes well ahead of what the technical limitations are that are built into the code is. And so sometimes it takes a little while for them to catch up. I mean, do you think that that's always happened? What do you make of that in terms of transgender players, especially?
Well, I can only speak for myself and the few other transgender players I've spoken to, but we love when games give you as much choice as possible. And there have been a handful of games in the last year or so that they take it one step further, where it's not just choosing your character's gender and appearance, but there's a slider that lets you choose different levels of masculinity and femininity. And there have been three or four RPGs in the last couple of years that have used some variation of that. So aside from gender preference and appearance, you also have that little pinch of adding in masculine and feminine animations to your character as well. And I think Dragon's Dogma had a slider for macho and ladylike, and that's the most recent one that I can recall.
Yeah, can you see that as sort of the way going forward? Instead of having these binary options, you do have a slider in the same way that you have sliders for skin color, for example.
Exactly. And, you know, giving players the option to play a full-out transgender character, it's just one step away from what's already available on the market.
What would you like to see happen as a result of panels such as yours? Is it simply the hope that you're going to be raising awareness, or are you looking for some of these more concrete improvements that we've been talking about?
Oh, well, it's a combination of a couple of things. First, we do want to raise awareness, but there's already a lot of awareness about transgender people in the game industry. It's an open secret. So there are a lot of people that, you know, game designers know that there are a lot of transsexuals and transvestites working in the industry and playing their games. And so it's well known. It's just not overtly talked about. And after the panel that we did a few months ago, I had two coworkers at one of the gaming websites that I write for come out to me. And a few other people have done that to some of the other panelists. So in terms of raising awareness, the awareness is already there. We just need to talk about it openly. And as for having real practical applications in the way that games are designed, yes, that's the next step. When we do PAX Prime in Seattle at the end of this month, we're doing two transgender panels, and one of them specifically focuses on being transgender in the industry and things that people who are making games want to include in the next generation of games.
Yeah, go into the panels that you're doing at the end of this month at PAX Prime. At PAX East, you did just one panel, but now you're doing two. So where did that decision come from, and how did you decide to kind of split that up?
Well, if you watch the video for the first panel, you'll see that very quickly into it, we started speeding up very quickly. As moderator, I was rushing everyone through their answers. And we had this finely tuned agenda going in. And just minutes in, I realized 1 hour was not going to be enough to explore all of these issues. Near the end of the panel, when we were starting to, give personal stories and deal with question and answers with the audience, we knew that a one-hour panel, even if we did another panel at PAX Prime, it wasn't going to be enough. So we've tried to split it into two separate panels. One is going to be transgender issues in gaming. We're calling it Press XY to Continue. And that's where we're going to discuss the characters and the games themselves as a continuation of what we were doing at PAX East. And then we're going to do a separate panel that's called Replay, Transgender Industry Professionals, New Lives, Old Careers, where we discuss what it's like to be an out-of-the-closet transgender person working in the industry.
And who is going to be on each of those panels?
Oh, well, the first one we're doing is going to be Friday at noon, and that's Replay. That's the transgender professionals in the industry. That's going to be myself moderating, Maddie Bryce, who's a game critic, Kelly Worrell from Electronic Arts, Rebecca Heineman, Janelle Jaques, and Caitlin Cusinelli. And everyone there is out of the closet, openly transgender, working in the industry. And then on Sunday, we're going to do the continuation of Press XY, Transgender Issues in Gaming. And that's going to be myself again, Kelly, Rebecca, Janelle, Caitlin, and Eric Patterson, who was at the panel in PAX East, is going to join us again for that one.
How did you find the reception at PAX East here, panel? You can see from the video that the room was pretty much filled to capacity. So,
I'd created a Facebook events page for it, and we had a couple dozen people click on the register through that page. And we went in there thinking that there was going to be just a handful of people sitting in the front row. And as we all walked through the convention center toward the panel, we saw this huge line. And Morgan asked one of the enforcers, who are all these people here to see? And it turned out they were there to see us. So we had, I think it was 500 people there to see it and a few people that couldn't get in. And we ended up running a little late and then staying out in front for some question and answer and meeting with people. So, I mean, the reception to the event was far, far greater than I had hoped it would be. And I'm very proud of the work that we did. We we really did get the ball rolling on something, I can only hope that we have a fraction of that success when we do at the in PAX Prime.
Well, Charles, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today, and best of luck with both of the panels at the end of this month.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad that you had me on again. And if any of your viewers want to come, we're doing one at Friday at noon and one of them on Sunday at noon.
And they can find details of that on your website or the PAX website?
You can find out all the information at the PAX website, but I will also have some links on my website, charlesbattersby.com. And the full video of the first panel is available on my website. If you believe what I know.